And here are some stories for the rest of the hour, told by Skywalker Payne during her virtual storytelling for the whole family, sponsored by Friends of the Homer Public Library and the Rasmussen Foundation and the Alaska State Council on the Arts. There are two more storytelling circles for the next two Tuesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. Register at the library website. It's free to attend. Now here's Skywalker Payne, recorded live Tuesday, February 9th.
Now, I have another story of another woman. And this story is actually from a book. And it is public domain. So I will actually be reading some of the words from the book as she wrote them because they're so good. But the book is called Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl. And on the book, it says Harriet Jacobs, but it was written by Linda Brent. But the book was published in 1861. And because of the Civil War and still of the fact that slaves and freed people were still getting captured and put into slavery, she did not use her real name. She began the book, and this is a little bit from her preface. Reader, be assured this narrative is no fiction. I am aware that some of my adventures may seem incredible, but they are nevertheless strictly true. I have not exaggerated the wrongs inflicted by slavery. On the contrary, my descriptions fall far short of the facts. I was born and reared in slavery, and I remained in a slave state for 27 years. I've not written my experience in order to attract attention to myself. On the contrary, it would have been more pleasant to me to have been silent about my own history. Neither do I care to excite sympathy for my own sufferings, but I do earnestly desire to arouse the women of the North to realizing sense of the conditions of 2 millions of women at the South, still in bondage, suffering what I suffered, and most of them far worse. I want to add my testimony to that of abler pens to convince the people of the free states what slavery really is. Only by experience can anyone realize how deep and dark and foul is that pit of abomination. May the blessings of God rest on this imperfect effort in behalf of my persecuted people. She was born in Edenton, North Carolina in 1813. And her father was a carpenter, and he was intelligent and skillful in his trade and allowed to do his work to support his family, but he had to pay his owner $200 a year. So he's paying the slave owner $200 a year, but he's able to take care of his family. And so Harriet grew up without really, until she was 6 years old, consciously being aware of being a slave because she lived with her parents and her younger brother, William. He was 2 years younger than her. And her father and parents were both light-skinned and were called mulattoes. And they had their own house and had a good life. And had her grandmother, her maternal grandmother, also lived there. And she loved her grandmother. Now, the grandmother's story was sad. The grandmother's father was her owner. And when he died, he freed the mother and her three children. And they were on their way to live in St. Augustine. And this was during the Revolutionary War. But they were captured and sold by someone else into slavery, even though they were free. So that movie that was shown, that happened a lot, too many times, that people were given their freedom and put back into slavery. And this is ironic that it happened during that war for freedom called the Revolutionary War. So her grandmother ended up being put back into slavery as a little girl, sold to the keeper of a hotel. And she had a hard childhood for a while, but she was industrious and bright. And she ended up getting advanced as far as she could in terms of her work, and people respected her. And at night, when Harriet was young, her grandmother would bake crackers and she'd sell them. And she was doing this, and she was able to keep this money for herself and save it. And she was working and saving money so she could purchase the freedom of her grandchildren or her children. And meanwhile, while her first few years of life were good for Harriet, her mother died, though, when she was 6 years old. And slowly her life began to change. Instead of her mother, she had a new mistress, her mother's mistress. And this woman was kind to her, and she loved being with her. In fact, she wrote, "My mistress was so kind to me that I was always glad to do her bidding and proud to labor for her as much as my young years would permit. I would sit by her side for hours, sewing diligently with a heart as free from care as that of any free-born white child. When she thought I was tired, she would send me out to run and jump in a way I bounded, to gather berries or flowers to decorate her room. Those were happy days, too happy to last." Because when Harriet turned 12, this mistress died, and it was the end of her happy days for a long, long time. Because instead of being freed as they thought they would be, her grandmother and Harriet, because her mistress had said she would, the person who took over her estate was named Dr. Flint, and he did not free them. In fact, he tried to sell Harriet's grandmother. But Harriet's grandmother was so well known in the community that when he tried to sell her, no one would buy her. Finally, one older woman in town bought the grandmother and immediately freed her and gave her her freedom. Oh yes, and that $300 that her grandmother had saved, the mistress had borrowed it from the grandmother and said she was going to pay her back. But after her death, when the grandmother went to get the money, Mr. Flint said he couldn't afford to pay her back. Now, Mr. Flint and his family were not the nice people that Harriet had known the first 12 years of her life. This is something she wrote about how they were treated in terms of food. "Little attention was paid to the slaves' meals in Dr. Flint's house. If they could catch a bit of food while it was going, well and good. But Harriet didn't worry, because she would stop by her grandmother's house and get food. And sometimes her grandmother had to stand at the door, Harriet get the food and run on and eat it to avoid getting criticized or punished by Mr. Evans, Dr. Evans, or his wife. So Mrs. Flint, this is Harriet writing about the doctor's wife. "Mrs. Flint, like many Southern women, was totally deficient in energy. She had not strength to superintend her household affairs, but her nerves were so strong that she could sit in her easy chair and see a woman whipped till her blood trickled every stroke of the lash. She was a member of the church, but partaking of the Lord's Supper did not seem to put her in a Christian frame of mind. If dinner was not served at the exact time on that particular Sunday, she would station herself in the kitchen and wait till the food was dished, and then spit in all the kettles and pans that had been used for cooking to prevent the cook and her children eking out a little meager fare from what remained of the gravy and the scrapings. The slaves could get nothing to eat except what she chose to give them. Poor provisions were weighed out by the pound and ounce 3 times a day. I can assure you, she gave them no chance to eat wheat bread from her flour barrel. She knew how many biscuits a quart of flour would make and exactly what size they ought to be. So this is just an example of the kind of constant daily pettiness that created the stress of being a slave, even working inside a house. And added to that was the attentions from the slave masters. In her book, Harriet gives many examples of the cruelty and hurt and suffering that she saw even as a young girl. But, and there were beatings, there was the lashings, but the one thing that was sad to her was seeing the way that the owners, the males, would take advantage of their female slaves and then take their own children and sell them. Now, as I said with the piles, that wasn't the case. That was an unusual case, because the usual case was that, depending upon the nature of the man and his wife's relationship, the slaves were either sold, treated badly, or killed. Harriet tells the story of a man who gets beaten. And she finds out the reason the man had gotten beaten was because he was arguing with his wife about her newborn baby, which was light-skinned, and both of them were dark-skinned. And Harriet says her owner himself was the father of 11 slaves, but no one would talk about them. And she tells of seeing a young girl, I once saw a young slave girl dying soon after the birth of a child nearly white. In her agony, she cried out, "Oh Lord, come and take me." Her mistress stood by and mocked at her like an incarnate fiend. "You suffer, do you? I'm glad of it. You deserve it all and more too." The girl's mother stood there sad and said, "The baby's dead, thank God. And I hope my poor child will soon be in heaven." This was a level of the abuse, the contradictions of slavery that still is at the root of a lot of the problems, because we are all related. But can you imagine what it would be like if you had someone in your family, your half brother, who'd been sold to slavery or put in jail because his mother was different? And of course, the way it worked was women in the United States had no, in that country had no power. It was a total patriarchy, except when it came to slave women and slave children. They did not be counted under their fathers, but under their mothers. If the mother was a slave, the child was a slave, because some of those fathers were their own owners. Now, they hired, she called, explains about hiring day was on January, the 1st of January after Christmas, when they would get new slaves, and people had no idea what would happen, and many families would be divided. On one of those sale days, I saw a mother lead 7 children to the auction block. She knew that some of them would be taken from her, but they took all. And that happened over and over and over again. And on one of those nights, when Harriet had returned to her grandmother, her uncle named Benjamin came and let her know that he was escaping. She didn't want him to go, but he convinced her he needed to do it. And even though he was caught once, he escaped again, and he never returned south. And that was the first inspiration for Harriet, because soon Harriet turned 15. Her childhood was over. Her innocence was over, because Mr. Flint began to talk to her. My master began to whisper foul words in my ear. Young as I was, I could not remain ignorant of their import. I tried to treat them with indifference or contempt, but he was my master. I was compelled to live under the same roof with him. He told me I was his property, that I must be subject to his will in all things. My soul revolted against the mean tyranny, but where could I turn for protection? No matter where the slave girl be, as black as ebony or as fair as her mistress, in either case, there is no shadow of law to protect her from insult, from violence, or even from death. All these are inflicted by fiends who bear the shape of men. The mistress who ought to protect the helpless victim has no other feelings toward her but those of jealousy and rage. The degradation, the wrongs, the vices that grow out of slavery are more than I can describe. My master met me at every turn, reminding me that I belonged to him, and swearing by heaven and earth that he would compel me to submit to him. If I went out for a breath of fresh air after a day of unwearied toil, his footsteps dogged me. If I knelt by my mother's grave, his dark shadow fell on me even there. And so that was the beginning of her struggle and journey to freedom. Because she had been raised by her grandmother to have certain values. And Mr. Flint was old enough to be older than her father. And most of the book, she talks about how he continues to literally follow her and push her, but he doesn't touch her. But he's because he wants her to agree, primarily out of fear of her grandmother. What ends up happening, two things happen. First, Harriet meets a free Black man who has interest in her. And he wants to buy her and marry her. But Mr. Flint totally refuses it and threatens the Black man's life. And Harriet, when she reflects, says, it would not be good because he was a free and intelligent man. But if they were to marry, their children would be slaves because she was a slave. Then, so after that fails, Flint continues to follow and try to urge her to be with him. First, he tries to set up an arrangement where one of his children was going to sleep in his bedroom, and he wanted the servant, Harriet, to sleep in there. But his wife heard about it and totally nixed that. Finally, Harriet meets a white man who is single, who is attracted to her, and he knew her grandmother. And she writes, he knew my grandmother and often spoke to me on the street. He became interested in me and asked about my master, which I answered in part. He expressed a great deal of sympathy and a wish to aid me. So much attention from a superior person was, of course, flattering, for human nature is the same in all. I also felt grateful for his sympathy and was encouraged by his kind words. It seemed to me a great thing to have such a friend. By degrees, a more tender feeling crept into my heart. He was an educated and eloquent gentleman, too eloquent, alas, for the poor slave girl, me, who trusted in him. But she eventually gets pregnant. His name was Mr. Sands. And when she tells Mr. Flint, he's very angry and he tells her she shouldn't see Sands again. But she does, and she has another child from him, a little girl. And over time, finally, she tires of the constant threats and harassment from Flint, who now threatens to sell her children or to hurt them. And the most violent he gets with her once is slapping her. And he throws her son across the room one time. So finally, through the help of Mr. Sands and her uncles and brothers and her grandmother, Harriet escapes from the Flint home. And he thinks she goes to New York. And this is the description of what she endured and how close she was. A small shed had been added to my grandmother's house years ago. Some boards were laid across the joists at the top, and between these boards and the roof was a very small garret, never occupied by anything but rats and mice. It was a bent roof covered with nothing but shingles. The garret was only 9 feet long and 7 wide. The highest point was 3 feet high and sloped down abruptly to the loose board floor. There was no admission for either light or air. My Uncle Philip, who was a great carpenter, had very skillfully made a concealed trap door. And this is where they took Harriet. A bed was spread on the floor. I could sleep quite comfortably on one side, but the slope was so sudden that I could not turn to my other without hitting the roof. The rats and mice ran over my bed, but I was weary. And she slept well that first night. And when she first was there, there was no window where there was nothing. She could hear her children outside, but she couldn't see anything. But she found a gimlet that had been left there, which enabled her to actually cut an inch square hole, which gave her more air and allowed her to see her children and others as they walked through the street. And that sustained her. Her food was given to her through the trapdoor by her grandmother and her uncle. And at night, she'd actually talk to her grandmother and her uncles after the children were asleep and after everything was quiet. But she spent 7 years, hidden there before she was finally able to make her way north. And she did that after both of her children had been taken by their father and her uncle. And she got north through the help of Mr. Sands and her uncle. But even once she got north, the Flints pursued her. She went to England and came back. And the five-year-old girl had now grown, who had been her mistress, and she came looking for Harriet. And by that time, Harriet was working for a woman named Mrs. Bruce. And Mrs. Bruce bought Harriet. Now, Harriet had not wanted to get sold. And she wrote, "I had objected to having my freedom bought. Yet I must confess that when it was done, I felt as if a heavy load had been lifted from my weary shoulders. When I rode home in the cars, I was no longer afraid to unveil my face and look at people as they passed, because now she knew no one could take her back to the Flints." And she lived a long life, was able to get her children back. Hers is a long story. It's a 300-page book. So I wanted to share some of her writing because it's so expressive. I'll run through real quickly. Our next story is...
Skywalker, can you pause for a second?
Sure.
Arjun has a question. I'm just going to...
Okay.
Unmute.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Skywalker. I wanted to ask, and I hope not to derail too much, but as a lot of people are familiar with, there's been a lot of proposals and reaction to things like putting Harriet Tubman on the American $20 bill. And I just wanted to know a little bit about what you thought of that discussion about how a complicated country like ours elevates people to the status of national symbols, and what part of it is mythical and what part is acknowledging the past and expressing acceptance, and what do you feel about all of that discussion?
Well, my whole thing is, hey, they said it's going to happen. It should have happened a few years ago. I was happy that it had been approved. The reason I'm telling these stories is because she is a symbol of mm-hmm. thousands of stories that need to be told.
Mm-hmm.
He's just one woman. And it's important, actually, because this country would not be where it is if it was not for the free labor of Black people. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was men in terms of building things, but women were out in those fields too. And the other thing is, Black women, the blood, the intermixture of our bloods mm-hmm. is so deep from slavery. And it's really important for us to recognize the commonalities that we have and the fact that if we start dealing with our ancestors, I've I've been going through a process of ancestral healing. I went through it myself. I've done it with a group of Black people. And I'm seeing, and the more I think about it, it's really important for us to deal with healing ourselves and our ancestors, because Black or white, and obviously, and what's interesting about these three women whose stories I'm telling you, and I'll talk a little bit about Frances Ellen Watkins, all three of these women were mixed women. They had white blood, and just like me. And the thing is, and the thing I've noticed about American history is that Americans, white Americans, love dark-skinned Black women quicker than they do light-skinned women. And that's a historic thing, which is another discussion. But what's interesting, when you look at things and you look at people who have gotten praised a lot, and all of these women were doing pretty much what Harriet Tubman did, just not out in the fields. Charlotte was out there helping people. And there's lots of other women. And it's so I think it's a great thing that we're beginning, Americans are beginning to acknowledge we're a multiracial, multicultural, multi-ethnic country. And that's why however there's any kind of acknowledgement. I mean, people can argue as much as they want, but if you look at our money is kind of ugly anyhow. We need to get some new faces and new colors. When you look at money from other countries, so I think it's a great thing. I think it's just one good step, but it's not, you know, it's one good step. Yeah. It's a symbolic step. Okay. And we only got two minutes. So you're welcome. I'm just going to talk real quickly about the last lady I was going to talk about. His name, Frances Ellen Watkins. Frances Watkins was an orphan. Her mother died when she was young, but she was free. She was born in Baltimore, Maryland, and she was free. But when she had to begin working when she was 13 years old, and she was working for a woman. And when she wasn't working, Frances would write. And the woman she was working for noticed that Frances liked to write and would give her books to read. And when she wrote a book of poetry when she was 25 called Autumn Leaves, which got some press, good and negative. And then she went on to teach at what was called Union Seminary, and eventually became Wilberforce University in Ohio. But she eventually returned back to Maryland, because when she worked in Pennsylvania, and she saw people going through the Underground Railroad. And I just want to read this one piece that she wrote, because it's just so beautiful, the way she wrote. I saw a passenger by the Underground Railroad, notwithstanding that abomination of the 19th century, the fugitive slave law, men still determined to be free. Notwithstanding all the darkness in which they keep slaves, it seems that somehow light is dawning upon their minds. These poor fugitives are a property that can walk. Just to think that from the rainbow-crowned Niagara to the swollen waters of the Mexican Gulf, from the restless murmur of the Atlantic to the ceaseless roar of the Pacific, the poor, half-starved, flying fugitive has no resting place for the sole of his feet. And she has a poetry to her writing, and she talks about a case of a woman who ends up, who was trying to escape slavery and gets caught. And one of her children had been killed by the mother. But instead of her being, and so a trial was held, but because she was an escaping slave, the courts found that the fugitive slave law preceded the murder case. So she was returned to slavery and didn't live more than 5 years. So these were the things that Frances Harper wrote about. And she worked in her life for anti-slavery causes. And after slavery and after the Civil War, she went to the South and helped people during Reconstruction. And I'll read this last piece of what she wrote about her experience. "You would be amused," she wrote a friend, "to hear some of the remarks which my lectures call forth. She is a man. She's not colored. She is white. She is painted. I am constantly talking, and how tired I am some of the time. Still, I am standing with my race on the threshold of a new era. Though some may be far past me in the learning of schools, yet today, with my limited and fragmentary knowledge, I may help the race forward a little. Some of our people remind me of sheep without a shepherd. I'm going to have a private meeting with the women. I'm going to talk with them about their daughters and about things connected with the welfare of the race. Now is the time for our women to begin to try to lift up their heads and plant the roots of progress under the hearthstone." So she was it's interesting. She was educated, self-educated, grew up as a free woman, and was light-skinned, and so expressed herself differently than those who had been working in the South, picking cotton and treated as slaves. But she united with them as a Black woman. And not only did she write in nonfiction and write about race, she wrote creative fiction, and she was the first Black woman to write a novel, and it was called Iola Leroy, The Shadows Uplifted. And she lived into her late 70s and died in 1900. Next week, we're gonna have some Alaska Black history. I look forward to seeing all of you then. And if you did miss last week's, you can go to the website and there's a link to it. And just click on that and you can see last week's. Thank you for coming. Have a good evening.
That is Skywalker Payne, recorded live last night on her Zoom storytelling circle. She has two more to go. You can register by going to the Homer Public Library website next Tuesday and the Tuesday after from 6 to 7 p.m. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. This has been The Coffee Table. This is KBBI Homer, AM 890. The time is 10 a.m. Good morning.